Hypaxia glanced over on their next turn. The Hind and the Hammer stood together, both in matte black masks, the angel in a white imperial uniform edged in gold. The Hind's golden, sparkling dress clung to her hips before falling to the floor. Her blonde hair had been swept up, and for once, no silver torque adorned her neck. Only slender gold earrings brushed her shoulders.
"They make a beautiful pair," Hypaxia murmured. "As monstrous inside as they are lovely outside, though."
Rune grunted.
"Yeah."
Hypaxia chewed on her lip.
"I was waiting until tonight to approach her."
He studied her face.
"You want me to go with you?"
He could offer nothing less.
"Do you think she'll react badly?"
"She's too smart to cause a scene, and I don't think the Hind is the sort to do that anyway. She's cut from the same cloth as my father. The worst thing that happens is that she ignores you."
Hypaxia stiffened in his arms.
"I suppose you're right. I'd rather get this meeting over with. It will spoil the rest of my night to stew over it."
"Why meet with her at all?"
"Because she is my sister, and I've never spoken to her or seen her in the flesh."
"I felt that way when I learned about Bryce's existence."
She nodded distractedly, her eyes darting around the room again.
"You're sure you don't mind coming with me?"
Rune checked the massive clock at the rear of the conservatory. 11:50. He had time, a few minutes. He needed something to distract himself with anyway.
"I wouldn't have offered if I didn't mean it."
They slipped from the dance floor, the crowd parting for the beautiful queen as she aimed for her sister. The Hind marked her approach without smiling. Pollux, however, grinned at Hypaxia, then at Rune. Hypaxia, to her credit, squared her shoulders as she halted.
"Lydia?"
The Hind's mouth curled upward.
"Hypaxia."
Her voice was low, smooth. It was a blatant show of disrespect not to use the queen's title, not to even bow. Hypaxia said,
"I wished to formally greet you."
She added, "Sister?"
"Now that is a name no one has ever called me,"
Lydia said. Pollux sneered. Rune bared his teeth in warning and received a mocking smile in return. Hypaxia tried once more.
"It is a name that I hope we can both hear more often."
Not one ounce of kindness or warmth graced the Hind's beautiful face, even with the mask.
"Perhaps,"
Lydia said, and went back to staring at the crowd, bored and disinterested, a dismissal and an insult. Rune glanced at the clock. He should go, make his way slowly to the garden doors, then slip outside. But he couldn't leave Hypaxia to face her sister alone.
"Are you enjoying Lunathian?"
Hypaxia tried.
"No,"
the Hind drawled.
"I find this city tediously plebeian."
The Hammer snickered, and Hypaxia said to him with wondrous authority,
"Go lurk somewhere else."
Pollux's eyes flashed.
"You can't give me orders."
But the Hind turned her cool, amused gaze on the Hammer.
"A minute, Pollux."
The Hammer glared at Hypaxia, but the Witch Queen remained unbowed before a male who'd slaughtered his way through the world for centuries. Rune saw his opening and said to Hypaxia, "I'll give you two a moment as well." Before the Queen could object, he backed into the crowd. He was a piece of shit for abandoning her, but he walked, unnoticed and unbothered, to the western doors, slipped out of them and down the five steps to the gravel ground. He strode to the fountain bubbling away in the shadows beyond the reach of the conservatory's lights and leaned against it, his heart pounding. 2 minutes now. Would day be here? He monitored the doors, forcing himself to breathe in and out slowly. Maybe this was a bad idea. He'd been talking to the Hind and the Hammer, for fuck's sake. This place was swarming with enemies, all of whom would slaughter him and day if they were found out. Why had he risked her like this?
"Looking for someone,"
a female voice crooned. Rune whirled, his stomach bottoming out as he beheld the masked figure before him. The harpy stood in the shadows beyond the fountain, as if she'd been waiting. Chapter 60. Rune scanned the face in the darkness. It couldn't be her. The fucking harpy? He took in her dark hair, the lean body, the taunting mouth.
What are you doing out here?
The harpy asked, stalking closer, her dark wings blacker than the night. Rune forced himself to take a breath.
Day?
He asked quietly. The harpy blinked.
What's that supposed to mean?
The breath nearly whooshed from him. Thank the fucking gods it wasn't her. But if the harpy was here, and Agent Daybright was about to appear? The harpy and the hind had shown up at the bar that day, but he'd seen nothing of the former since. And yeah, meeting by the fountain with another person wouldn't scream rebel liaison, but if the harpy had any suspicions about him, or whoever Daybright was, if she saw them meeting together. He had to get out of here, walk back into the conservatory and not endanger Day. What an idiot he was.
Enjoy the party, Rune said to the harpy.
No stolen kisses for me in the garden,
she mocked as he stormed up the steps. He'd explain to Day later. The clock read 12:02. She hadn't come. Or maybe she'd seen who was in the garden and decided to hang back. Seen who also observed from the shadows at the top of the stairs. The hind's golden eyes gleamed in the dimness through her mask. She'd followed him. Fuck. Had she suspected that he was slipping away to meet with someone? She hadn't said a word, as far as he knew, about the shit that had gone down at Idra. Was it so she could ultimately follow them to a bigger prize? To the greatest prize a spycatcher could find, Agent Daybright. Rune stared down the hind as he passed her. She watched him with serene indifference. He tugged at his collar as he entered the noise and heat of the party. He'd come that close to being caught by the hind and the harpy, to getting Day caught by them. Rune didn't say goodbye to anyone before bailing. Hunt licked his way up Bryce's neck, a hand sliding over her mouth to muffle her moan as he tugged her down the dim hallway.
You want someone to find us?
His voice was guttural.
We're official now. I don't care.
But she fumbled with the handle of the cloakroom door. Standing behind her, mouth at her throat, Hunt suppressed a groan of his own as her ass pushed into his aching cock. Another few seconds, and they'd be in the cloakroom, and within a few seconds of that, he planned to be balls deep in her. He knew Baxian and Naomi had been well aware they weren't going down this hall to use the bathroom, but the angels guarding the door had only smirked at them.
It's locked, she mumbled,
and Hunt huffed a laugh against her warm skin.
Good thing you've got a big, tough alpha hole with you, Quinlan,
he said, pulling away from her. Gods, if anyone walked down this hallway, they'd get a glimpse at his pants and know what was about to go down. He'd lasted all of 3 dances before needing to slip away with her. They'd return to the party soon, once they got in a good, solid fuck. He'd be damned if he'd ever call himself Prince Hunt. But it had been worth it. The wild plan she'd spun for him more than 2 weeks ago, when she'd honored him by asking if he'd do this. Hunt dragged his teeth down the column of her neck, then tugged her a step back. Bryce, panting softly, face flushed with desire that set his cock pounding, grinned fiendishly at him.
Watch and learn, sweetheart,
Hunt said, and rammed his shoulder into the door. The lock splintered, and Hunt didn't hesitate before tugging her in with him. Her arms slid around his neck, all of her lining up with him, and he hefted her leg to wrap around his waist, bracing to hoist her up. A squeak of surprise halted him. Hunt whirled, mind trying to match up with what his senses were blaring. But there it was. There they were. Celestina's dress had been tugged down, bearing one full round breast, gleaming as if someone had been licking it. But it wasn't Ephraim who stood before the archangel, positioned between the female and Hunt. It wasn't Ephraim whose own clothes were askew, hair mussed, lips swollen. It was Hypaxia. Hunt had no idea what to say. Bryce cleared her throat and stepped in front of Hunt, blocking his raging erection from view.
I guess the locked door means already occupied, huh?
Hypaxia and Celestina just stared at them, their hair half falling out of their elegant arrangements. Hunt slowly, quietly shut the door behind them, lifted his hands, because that was a faint glow of power beginning to shimmer around Celestina, an archangel's wrath priming to strike down any enemy.
Hunt couldn't stop his own lightning from answering, its zap searing through him.
If Celestina was going to throw down, he'd match her. Bryce said breathlessly to Hypaxia, as she sensed the brewing storm in the cloakroom.
I've never been in this kind of situation before.
Hypaxia glanced to the governor, whose eyes had turned white, flaring with power, and said to Bryce, an attempt at casualness,
Me neither.
The only way in and out was the door at Hunt's back, unless Celestina blasted apart the entire top of the building. Hunt put a hand on Bryce's shoulder, but his mate said brightly,
In case we need to clarify, we aren't going to say anything.
Hypaxia nodded sagely.
We thank you.
She peered up at the archangel, at her lover.
Celestina?
The governor didn't take her gaze from Hunt. If he so much as breathed wrong, she'd kill him in 2 fucking seconds. Hunt grinned, though. She could try to kill him.
My lips are sealed.
Her wings glowed, so bright the entire cloakroom was illuminated.
You endanger the person I love, Celestina said, her voice echoing with power. For infringing on what he considers his, Ephraim will end her, or the Asteri will kill her to make a statement.
Bryce kept her hands up.
The Asteri are probably going to kill me too, at some point.
Hunt whipped his head to her.
She wouldn't. I like you, she said instead,
and Hunt tried not to sag with relief that she hadn't explained their rebel activities.
I think you're good for this city.
Ephraim and his loser cabal, not so much. But once he's gone home, I think you're going to make Lunathian even more awesome. Hunt threw her an incredulous look. She shrugged. Bryce's eyes met Celestina's. Her star flared. Power to power, female to female, governor to... Princess wasn't the right word for the expression that came across Bryce's face, the shift of her posture. Another word formed on his tongue, but Hunt didn't let it take root, didn't let himself think of all the deadly implications that the other word would entail. Bryce said, with that more than princess bearing,
I have no plans to fuck you over, either of you.
She faced Hypaxia, who was giving Bryce that more-than-princess look, too.
We're allies, not only politically, but as females who have had to make some shitty, hard choices. As females who live in a world where most powerful males see us only as breeding tools.
Hypaxia nodded again, but Celestina continued to stare at Bryce, a predator surveying the best place to strike. Hunt rallied his power again. Bryce continued,
I'm no one's prize mare.
I took a gamble with this idiot. She jerked a thumb toward Hunt, who gaped at her, and luckily, it paid off. And I just want to say that, she swallowed, if you two want to make a gamble with each other, say fuck it to the arrangements with Ephraim and Rune, then I'm with you. We'd have to go against the Asteri, but
look what I did tonight. Whatever I can do, whatever clout I have, it's yours. But let's start by walking out of this closet in one piece.
Silence fell. And slowly, like a setting sun, the Archangel's power dimmed until only her silhouette glowed with it. Hypaxia laid a hand on her lover's shoulder, proof that they were safe. Celestina said, setting her fine clothing to rights,
We weren't without choices in this. When the Autumn King came asking for Hypaxia's hand for his son, I was the one who encouraged her to accept. But who I love, who I am mated to, those are decisions that I am not entitled to make as an archangel.
Hunt grunted, I know how that feels. At Celestina's arched brow, he pointed to his branded out wrist.
Slave, remember?
Perhaps there's a thin line between governor and slave, Hypaxia mused.
Celestina admitted,
I thought that Hypaxia might wed the prince, perhaps in a political sense, and when enough time had passed, we could resume our relationship. But then the Asteri gave the order about Ephraim, and I found myself with little choice but to say yes.
Bryce asked quietly, Did Ephraim?
I agreed to it,
the governor said firmly,
though I can't say I found it enjoyable.
Hypaxia kissed her cheek. That was why Celestina had seemed so unsettled before her first night with Ephraim, so haunted afterward, because her heart lay elsewhere. Bryce said to the females, For however long you want and need to keep this secret, we won't breathe a hint to anyone. You have my word. And it occurred to Hunt, as both females nodded, that Bryce had somehow earned their trust, had become someone who people trusted unfailingly. A more than princess, indeed. Hunt smiled at his mate and said,
Well, we should probably leave, before someone comes in and finds us all in here and thinks I'm having the night of my life.
Hypaxia and Bryce laughed, but Celestina's answering smile was subdued. Bryce seemed to note that and looped her arm through the Witch Queen's, steering her toward the door and murmuring,
Let's discuss how much this evening will piss off the Autumn King and how wonderful that will be,
as they left, leaving Hunt and Celestina alone. His archangel observed him. Hunt didn't dare move.
So, you're truly a prince now, Celestina said.
Hunt blinked.
Yeah, I guess.
The governor walked past him, toward where her lover had gone into the hall.
There's a fine line between prince and slave, too, you know.
Hunt's chest tightened.
I know.
Then why accept the burden? She asked, pausing.
Bryce seemed thick as thieves with the Witch Queen as they walked arm in arm.
She's worth it.
But Celestina said, face solemn,
Love is a trap, Hunt.
She shook her head, more at herself than him.
One I can't figure out how to free myself from.
You want to be free of it?
The archangel stepped into the hall, wings still glowing with a remnant of power.
Every single day.
Therion tried not to glance at his watch, technically his grandfather's waterproof watch, given to him upon high school graduation, as the night wore on. Bryce's betrothal coup had provided 5 minutes of glorious amusement before he'd been sucked into boredom and impatience. He knew it was an honor to be here, to escort the River Queen's daughter, who was sparkling with delight and joy. But it was hard to feel that privilege when he'd been ordered to attend the ball at her side. Therion had waited at the docks by the river gate at sundown, dressed to the nines. The River Queen's daughter had emerged from the mists in a pale oak boat, pulled by a bevy of snow-white swans. Therion hadn't failed to notice the Sobeks lurking 50 feet beyond them, sentinels for this journey of their queen's most precious daughter.
Is it not magical?
His companion was saying for the fifth time that night, sighing at the lights and dancing couples. Therion drained the rest of his champagne. She is allowed to have one glass of wine, her mother had said in her letter via Otter, and she is to be home by one. Therion finally glanced at his watch, 12:20. Another 15 minutes and he could start ushering her toward the door. He handed his flute to a passing server, but found his companion's expression had turned dangerously pouty. He offered her a charming, bland smile, but she said,
You do not seem to be enjoying yourself.
I am, he assured her, taking her hand and pressing a kiss to her knuckles.
Your friends do not come to speak with us.
Well, considering that he'd seen Bryson Hunt slip off somewhere, that was no surprise. Ethan was chatting with Naomi Boreas and the Hellhound at the doors. And the others? Rune and Cormac had bailed. No sign of Hypaxia.
Though the Witch Queen had already come to speak with them,
he'd had a hard time meeting her gaze throughout the awkward conversation, while she could see how stupid he'd been in tying himself to this female. But Hypaxia had been kind to the River Queen's daughter, who herself had been all smiles. Therion hadn't dared call her Pax.
My friends have a lot of glad-handing to do, he hedged.
Oh.
She fell silent, lurking on the edge of the dance floor as couples swept past. Maybe it was all the champagne, but he really looked at her. The dark eyes full of longing and quiet happiness, the eager energy buzzing from her, the sense that she was some creature crafted into mortal form only for this night and would dissolve into river silt as soon as the clock struck one. Was he any better than her mother? He'd been stringing this girl along for 10 years now, had held her back tonight because he didn't feel like enjoying himself. She must have felt the weight of his stare, because she twisted to him. Therion offered her another bland smile, then turned to one of the bodyguards lurking in the shadows behind them. Hey, Tritus, can you take over for this dance? The guard glanced between them, but Therion smiled down at the River Queen's daughter, whose brows were raised. Go dance, he told her. I'll be right back. He didn't let her object before handing her off to the guard, who was actually blushing as he extended his arm. And Therion didn't look back as he strode off into the crowd, wondering how much shit he'd be in for this. But even if he was flayed for it, he wasn't going to string her along any further. He paused on the outskirts of the crowd, finally turning to see the guard and the River Queen's daughter dancing, both of them smiling, happy. Good. She deserved that. Mother or not, temper or not, she deserved someone to make her happy. Therion made his way over to the nearest open bar and was about to order a whiskey when he noticed a curvy female, a leopard shifter from the scent of her, lounging against the counter beside him. He'd always noticed a good ass, and this female? Hell yes. Come here often? He asked her with a wink. The leopard turned her head toward him, light brown skin radiant in the soft lights. Her eyes were thick-lashed, utterly gorgeous above high cheekbones and full lips, all of it framed by golden brown hair that fell around her heart-shaped face in soft waves. She had the ease and grace of a movie star, probably was one if she was important enough to be here. That full mouth curled into a smile.
Is that your attempt at a pickup line?
He knew that sultry tone, so Therion ordered his whiskey and said to the stranger, You want it to be. Chapter 61 Are you all right? Ethan asked Hypaxia, as the clock neared 3:30 in the morning. She'd complained of some stomach cramps and had left the party for about 20 minutes, returning pale-faced. The Witch Queen now tucked a dark curl behind her ear, then adjusted the fall of her jet-black robes, having pulled them over her gown moments before. Even standing in the small clearing of an olive grove nestled in the hills beyond the city, the sounds of revelry reached them, booming bass, cheering, strobing lights, a far cry from the whispering leaves and dry ground around him, the stars glinting beyond the silvery canopy. Another world away from that glittering party, where so many powers had come together tonight. Where Bryce had somehow outmaneuvered the Autumn King and had declared Hunt her prince. He hadn't known what to think in that moment. He'd done his best to stay the fuck away from Sabine and Amelie tonight. Thankfully, they had been present only long enough to see the Asteri speak, then left. He hated himself for being so relieved about it. The Prime hadn't attended. He usually avoided such functions. So, this is it? Ethan asked Hypaxia, gesturing with a hand to the 7 candles she'd arranged on the ground. Light the candles and wait? Hypaxia drew out a long dagger.
Not quite, she said,
and Ethan kept a step back as she used the knife to draw lines between the candles. Ethan angled his head.
A 6-pointed star, he said,
like the one Bryce had made between the gates this spring, with the 7th candle at its center.
It's a symbol of balance, she explained,
moving away a foot, but keeping the dagger at her side. Her crown of cloudberries seemed to glow with an inner light.
2 intersecting triangles, male and female, dark and light, above and below, and the power that lies in the place where they meet.
Her face became grave.
It is in that place of balance where I'll focus my power.
She motioned to the circle.
No matter what you see or hear, stay on this side of the candles.
A chill went up Ethan's spine, even as his heart lightened.
If he could just talk to Connor. He'd thought over and over about what he'd say, but he couldn't remember any of it.
Hypaxia read whatever lay in his gaze,
her face again solemn. But a bargain was a bargain. Hypaxia lifted both arms, holding the dagger aloft, and began chanting. Day appeared far down the bridge and stayed there, like she didn't want to come near him.
Rune sat on his couch, forearms on his knees.
He'd been reeling from what had gone down in the garden for hours now, was surprised he'd even fallen asleep in his physical body. He rushed to her.
I'm sorry I endangered you.
Day said nothing, just stood there burning. He tried again.
It was a really dumb idea. I'm sorry if you showed and I wasn't there. I got to the garden and the harpy and the hind had trailed me, and I think they might have suspected me or, I don't know, but I'm so sorry, Day.
I was there, she said quietly.
What?
I saw you, she said, and stalked forward. Saw the threat, too, and stayed away.
Where? In the garden?
She came closer.
I saw you,
she said again, like she was still processing it.
You came.
He shook his head. I thought you might not have, and we didn't talk since we made that plan, and I was worried.
Rune.
His name on her lips rocked through him. He shuddered.
You know who I am?
Yes.
Say my name again.
She came closer.
Rune.
Her flames parted enough for him to get a glimpse of a smile.
Are you still in the city? Can I meet you somewhere?
It was the middle of the night, but it was the equinox. People would be partying until dawn, but they'd be masked. He and Day could fit right in.
No.
Her voice flattened.
I'm gone.
Liar. Tell me where you are.
Did you learn nothing tonight? Did you not see how close we came to disaster? The Asteri's servants are everywhere. One mistake, even for a moment, and we are dead.
His throat worked.
When the harpy came out of the shadows, I thought she was you. I panicked for a moment.
A quiet laugh.
That would have been awful for you,
to have me be someone you hate so much?
It would take some adjustment.
So you do have a notion of what you expect me to be like?
I don't, I just don't want you to be her.
Another laugh.
And you're a fey prince.
Does it gross you out?
Should it?
It grosses me out.
Why?
Because I've done nothing to deserve that title.
She studied him.
The Autumn King is your father, the one who hurt you.
The one and only.
He's a disgrace of a king.
You should talk to my sister. I think she'd like you.
Bryce Quinlan.
He tensed at her knowing Bryce's name so readily, but if she'd been at the party tonight, she'd know without a doubt.
Yeah, she hates my father even more than I do.
But Day's flame dimmed.
You're engaged to Queen Hypaxia.
He almost laughed it off, but her voice was so grave.
It's complicated.
You danced with her like it wasn't.
You saw me?
Everyone saw you.
That sharpness in her voice, was it jealousy? He said carefully,
I'm not the two-timing sort. Hypaxia and I are betrothed in name only. I don't even know if we'll marry. She has as little attachment to me as I do to her. We like and admire each other, but that's about it.
Why should I care?
He studied her, then took a step closer, until only a hand's breadth separated them.
I wanted to see you tonight. I spent the entire time watching the clock.
Her breathing hitched.
Why?
So I could do this.
Rune lifted her chin and kissed her. The mouth beneath the fire was soft and warm and opened for him.
Flaming fingers twined through his hair, tugging him close, and Rune slid his arms around a slim, curving body, hands feeling her ample backside.
Fuck yes.
His tongue brushed over hers, and she shuddered in his arms. But she met him stroke for stroke, as if she couldn't hold back, as if she wanted to know every inch of him, his every taste and nuance. Her hand slid along his jaw, fingers exploring the shape of his face. He willed his knight to pull back to show his eyes, his nose, his mouth. Thankfully, it obeyed him. Beyond the veil of flame covering her features, he could feel her watching him, seeing his bared face. Her fingers traced the bridge of his nose, the bow of his lips. Then she kissed him again, with sheer abandon, and Rune gave himself entirely to it.
"You remind me that I'm alive," she said, voice thick. "You remind me that goodness can exist in the world."
His throat ached.
"Day."
But she hissed, stiffening against his grip. She glanced back toward her end of the bridge. No, that male who'd once dragged her from sleep to have sex with her. Day whipped her head back to Rune, and the flame rippled, revealing pleading eyes of solid fire.
"I'm sorry,"
she whispered, and vanished. Hunt was still drunk when he and Bryce returned to the apartment at 3 in the morning. She carried her heels in one hand, the train of her dress in the other. They'd left the party soon after Rune had bailed, and headed to a dive bar in the heart of the old square, where they'd proceeded to play pool and drink whiskey in their ridiculous finery. They didn't talk about what they'd discovered in the cloakroom. What more was there to say? "I'm plastered," Bryce announced to the dim apartment, slumping onto the couch. Hunt chuckled.
"Very princessish."
She removed her earrings, chucking the diamonds onto the coffee table as if they were cheap costume jewelry. The comb in her hair followed, gems glinting in the soft first lights. She stretched out her legs, bare feet wiggling on the coffee table.
"Let's never do that again."
"The whiskey, or outsmarting your father, or the party?"
Hunt tugged his white bow tie free of its knot as he approached the couch and peered down at her. She huffed a laugh. "The party. Outsmarting my father and the whiskey will always be a repeat activity." Hunt sat on the coffee table, adjusting his wings around it.
"It could have been a lot worse."
"Yeah. Though I can't think of anything much worse than gaining multiple enemies for the price of one." That the Asteri's appearance had only been a footnote said plenty about their night. "Though Celestina isn't our enemy, I guess." Hunt picked up one of her feet and began rubbing the insole. She sighed, sinking back into the cushions. Hunt's cock stirred at the pure pleasure she radiated.
"Can I tell you something?"
Hunt said, massaging the arch of her foot.
"Something that might be deemed alpha-hole-ish."
"As long as you keep rubbing my foot like that, you can say whatever the hell you want." Hunt laughed.
"Deal."
He picked up her other foot, starting on that one.
"I liked being at the party tonight. Despite all the fancy clothes and the Asteri and the stuff with Hypaxia and Celestina, despite all the prince bullshit, I liked being seen with you."
Her mouth quirked to the side. "You liked staking your territory?"
"Yeah."
He let her see the predator in him.
"I've never had that with anyone."
She frowned. "Shahar never showed you off?"
"No. I was her general. At public functions, we didn't appear together. She never wanted that. It would have positioned me as an equal, or at least someone she deemed important."
"I thought your movement was all about equality," Bryce said, frown deepening.
"It was. But we still had to play by the old rules.
Rules that continued to govern and dictate people's lives, Celestina's and Hypaxia's lives. So she never came out and said, 'Hey, world, he's my boyfriend.'" Hunt laughed and marveled that he did so. He'd never thought he'd be able to laugh about anything related to Shahar.
"No. It's why I was so honored when you asked me to do this."
Bryce studied him. "Do you want to go outside so we can get caught fooling around in public by the press? That'll make us really official."
Maybe another time.
Hunt lifted her foot to his mouth, pressing a kiss to the instep.
So we're, like, married.
Are we? She held out a hand before her, studying her splayed fingers. I don't see a ring, Athalar. He nipped at her toes, earning a squeal from her.
You want a ring? I'll get you one.
Another kiss.
You want iron, steel, or titanium?
Wedding bands in Lunathian were simple, their value derived from the strength of the metal used to forge them. Titanium all the way, baby, she crowed, and Hunt bit her toes again.
She squirmed, but he held her firm. These little toes make me think some dirty things, Quinlan,
he said against her foot. Please tell me you don't have a foot fetish.
No, but everything where you're involved is a fetish for me.
Oh? She leaned back farther into the cushions, her dress slipping up her legs. So, I make you want to get a little kinky?
Uh-huh.
He kissed her ankle.
Just a little.
She arched into the touch. Want to have drunk, sloppy sex, Prince Hunt? He rumbled a laugh against her calf. Only from her lips would he tolerate that title.
Fuck yeah.
She pulled her leg from his touch and stood with that dancer's grace. Unzip me.
Romantic.
She gave him her back, and Hunt, still seated, reached up to tug at the zipper hidden down the length of her spine. The tattoo of the horn appeared, along with inches of golden skin, until the first tendrils of lace from her thong were revealed. The zipper ended before he could get a view of what he wanted. But Bryce peeled the dress from her front, letting it drop. She hadn't worn a bra, but the black thong. Hunt ran his hands over the firm cheeks of her ass, bending to bite at a delicate strap of her underwear. She let out a soft, breathy sound that had him kissing the base of her spine. Her long hair brushed his brow, silken and as lovely as a caress. Bryce turned in his grip, and, what luck, he found himself right where he wanted to be. From where it sat high on her hips, her thong plunged into a dramatic V, a veritable arrow pointing to paradise. He kissed her navel, flicked her nipples with his thumbs as he licked up toward them. Her fingers slid into his hair, her head tipping back as he closed his mouth around a taut bud. He rolled her nipple over his tongue, savoring the weight and taste of it, his hands drifting around her waist, tangling in the straps of her thong, tugging it down her hips, her thighs. He moved to her other breast, sucking it into his mouth. Bryce groaned, and his cock pushed against the front of his dress pants. He liked having her at his mercy, liked this image of her wholly naked and resplendent before him, his to touch and pleasure and worship. Hunt smiled against her breast. He liked it a lot. He rose, scooping her into his arms and carrying her to the bedroom, his bow tie dangling around his neck. He laid her on the mattress, cock pulsing at the sight of her heavy-lidded with desire, sprawled there naked and his for the taking. He pulled the tie free.
Wanna get a little kinky with me, Quinlan?
She glanced to the iron posts of the headboard, and her red lips parted in a feline grin. Oh, yes. Hunt made quick work of binding her hands to the bedposts, light enough not to hurt, but tight enough that getting any ideas about touching him while he feasted on her was out of the question. Bryce lay stretched out before him, and Hunt could hardly get a breath down as he unbuttoned his shirt, then his pants. He shed his shoes, his socks, all the trappings of civility, until he stood before her naked, and Bryce bit her lip. Then he propped up her knees and spread them wide.
Fuck,
he said, taking in her gleaming sex, already drenched for him. Its heady scent hit him, and he shuddered, cock now a steady ache.
Since I can't touch myself, she said huskily, maybe you'll do the honors.
Fuck,
he said again, unable to think of anything else. She was so beautiful, every single part of her. Are you articulating what you'd like to do to me, or has your brain short-circuited? He snapped his gaze to her own.
I wanted to draw this out, really torment you. her legs spread a little wider, a taunting invitation. Oh?
I'll save that for another day,
he growled, and crawled on top of her. The tip of his cock nudged at her wet, hot entrance, and a shiver of anticipatory pleasure went down his spine. But he ran a hand down the length of her torso, fingers tracing the silken swells of her breasts, the plane of her stomach. She writhed, tugging on the restraints.
So defiant.
He dipped to kiss her neck. He pushed in a little, his mind blacking out at the perfect tightness. But he withdrew and eased back in a little more, even when every instinct screamed to plunge into her. Unless she asked for it, he'd be careful. He wanted her to feel only ecstasy.
Stop teasing,
she said, and Hunt raked his teeth down her left breast, sucking in her nipple as he sank a bit further into her sheer perfection.
More,
she snarled, hips rising as if she'd impale herself on him. Hunt laughed.
Who am I to deny a princess?
Her eyes flashed with desire hot enough to sear his soul.
I'm issuing a royal decree for you to fuck me, Hunt. Hard.
His balls tightened at the words, and he gave her what she wanted. They both groaned as he sank all the way home in a thrust that had him seeing stars. She felt like bliss, like eternity. Hunt withdrew and thrust again, and there were indeed stars around them. No, it was her. She was glowing like a star. Her hips undulated, meeting his, driving him deeper.
Fuck yes.
She was his and he was hers, and now the whole fucking world knew it. He sent out a fizzle of his lightning, snapping the restraints on her wrists. Her hands instantly came around his back, fingers grappling hard enough to draw sweet slices of pain. Hunt's wings twitched, and she wrapped her legs around his middle. He sank even deeper, and holy fuck, the squeeze of her. She flexed those inner muscles. His eyes nearly rolled back in his head.
So lost, Quinlan.
Hard, she breathed in his ear. Fuck me like the prince you are.
Hunt lost it. He pulled back enough to grip her ass in both hands, tilting her pelvis upward, and plunged in. She moaned, and everything he was transformed into something primal and animalistic. His mate to touch and fuck and fill. Hunt let himself go, pounding into her again and again and again. Bryce's moans were sweet music, a temptation and a challenge. She glowed, and Hunt looked at his cock, sliding in and out of her, shining with her wetness. He was glowing too, not with her starlight, but... Fuck, his lightning was crackling down his arms, his hands skittering over her hips, up to her breasts.
Don't stop,
she gasped as his lightning flared.
Don't stop.
Hunt didn't. He yielded to the storm, riding it, riding her, and there was only Bryce, her soul and her body and the flawless fit of them.
Hunt,
she pleaded, and he knew from her breathy tone that she was close. He didn't let up, didn't give her 1 ounce of mercy. The slap and slide of their bodies meeting filled the room, but the sounds were distant. The world was distant as his power and essence flowed into her. Bryce cried out, and Hunt turned frenzied, pounding once, twice. On the third mightiest thrust, he ruptured, his power with him. Lightning filled the room, filled her as surely as his seed, and he kissed her through it. Tongues meeting, ether flooding his senses. He could never get enough of this connection, this sex, this power flowing between them. He needed it more than he needed food, water, needed this sharing of magic, this twining of souls. He'd never stop craving it. Then he was falling, amid black wind and lightning and stars. He came through all of it, roaring his pleasure to the skies, because those were skies above them, and city lights, booming bass from a nearby party. Hunt stilled, gaping down at Bryce, at the surface beneath her, the apartment building's roof. Bryce grinned sheepishly.
Oops.
Chapter 62
Hypaxia's chants rose in volume and complexity, the full moon with them. It silvered the orchard.
Ethan shivered against the cold. He knew that it wasn't due to the night around them or the autumn unfolding. No, the air had been pleasantly warm a moment ago. Whatever Hypaxia's magic was doing, it was bringing the frigid temperatures with it.
I can feel a presence,
the Witch Queen whispered, arms lifted toward the moon, beautiful face solemn.
Someone is coming.
Ethan's mouth dried out. What would he even say to Connor? I love you would likely be the first. I miss you every minute of every damn day would be the second. Then the warning. Or should it be the warning first? He shook out his trembling fingers at his sides.
Get ready to say your piece. Your brother's spirit is strong. I'm not sure how long I can hold the star.
Something weirdly like pride rose in him at that. But Ethan stepped closer, breathing evenly, exactly as he had before important games, during game-winning shots. Focus. He could do this. He'd deal with the repercussions later. The star she'd drawn glowed a faint blue, illuminating the trees around them.
One more moment, Hypaxia hissed, panting, a faint sheen on her temples, like this was draining the power out of her.
Light ruptured from the star, blinding and white, a great wind shaking the trees around them, sending olives scattering in a pitter-patter. Ethan squeezed his eyes shut against it, letting his claws slide free. When the wind stopped, he blinked, adjusting his vision. His brother's name died in his throat. A creature, tall and thin and robed, lurked in the center of the six-pointed star. Hypaxia let out a soft gasp. Ethan's stomach clenched. He'd never seen the male, but he'd seen drawings. The Underking.
You were not summoned, Hypaxia said, mastering her surprise. She lifted her chin, every inch the queen. Return to the misty isle over which you rule.
The Underking laughed at the witch. Her body shimmered with pale blue light, like she was rallying her power. But the Underking slowly turned his head to Ethan, let out another dry, husky laugh.
Young fools, you play with powers beyond your ken.
His voice was horrible, full of dusty bones and the pleading screams of the dead. Yet Hypaxia didn't back down an inch.
Be gone, and let us see the one whom I have summoned.
Ethan's hand drifted toward his gun. It wouldn't do anything. His wolf form would protect him better with its speed, but even losing that split second to shifting might make him vulnerable and cost Hypaxia her life. The Underking extended a bony hand. Light rippled where it met the edge of the star.
Do not fear, wolf pup. I cannot harm you. Here, at least.
He grinned, exposing two large brown teeth. Ethan bristled, and he found his voice at last as he growled,
I want to speak to my brother.
Beside him, Hypaxia was murmuring under her breath, the light around her building.
Your brother is well cared for.
Dark fire danced in the Underking's milky eyes.
But whether that remains so now depends entirely on you.
What the hell does that mean?
Ethan demanded, but the Witch Queen had tensed. Wind stirred her curly hair, as if she were readying her defenses. The Underking lifted a bony hand, and an eerie, greenish light wreathed his fingers. Ethan could have sworn ancient, strange symbols swirled in that light.
Let's play a little game first.
He inclined his head to Hypaxia, whose face had gone stony, anticipatory.
The House of Flame and Shadow has long been curious about your abilities, Your Majesty.
Bryce knew she was dreaming, knew she was physically in her bed, knew she was currently tucked up against Hunt's side. But she also knew that the being in front of her was real, even if the setting was not. She stood on a vast, dusty plain before an azure, cloudless sky. Distant dry mountains studded the horizon, but she was surrounded only by rock and sand and emptiness.
Princess.
The voice was like hell embodied, dark and icy and smooth.
Prince?
Her voice shook. Apollyon, Prince of the Pit, had chosen to appear in a golden-haired, golden-skinned body, handsome in the way that ancient statues were handsome, in the way that Pollux was handsome. His black eyes, however, gave him away. No whites anywhere, only unending darkness. The Star Eater himself. She asked, trying to master her shaking.
Where are we? Parthos, or what remains of it?
The barren land seemed to stretch on forever.
In the real world, or in, like, dream world?
He angled his head, more animal than humanoid.
Dream world, or what do you consider to be dreams?
She wasn't going to touch that one.
All right, then. Nice to meet you.
Apollyon's mouth curved upward.
You do not cower before me.
Aedas kind of ruined your scary monster vibe. A soulless laugh.
My brother has the tendency to be a thorn in my side.
Maybe he should join this conversation.
Aedas would be angry with me for speaking with you. That's why I picked this moment, when he is conveniently occupied.
With what?
Raising Hell's armies, readying them.
Her breath hitched. To invade Midgard?
It's been long in the making.
I'm going to make a request on behalf of my planet and say, please stay in your own world. Another twitch of his mouth.
You do not trust us. Good. Thea did. It was her downfall.
The Starborn Queen?
Yes. Aedas's great love.
Bryce started.
His what?
Apollyon waved a broad hand to the ruined world around them.
Why do you think I slew Peleus? Why do you think I went on to devour Sirius? All for him, my foolish, lovesick brother. In such a rage over Thea's death at Peleus's hands, his folly lost us that phase of the war.
Bryce had to blink. I'm sorry, but please back up. You summoned me into this dream to tell me about how Aedas, Prince of the Chasm, was the lover of Thea, the first Starborn Queen, even though they were enemies?
They were not enemies. We were her allies. She and some of her Fey forces allied with us, against the Asteri.
Her mouth dried out.
Why didn't he tell me this? Why are you telling me this?
Why are you not yet master of your powers? I was very clear. I told your mate you must both explore your potential.
Did you send those reapers to jump me and Rune?
What reapers?
She could have sworn his confusion was sincere. The ones who told me the same exact thing, to master my powers.
I did no such thing.
That's what the Underking said. I'm guessing one of you is lying.
This is not a useful debate, and I do not appreciate being called a liar.
Pure threat laced the words, but Bryce steeled herself. You're right. It's not a useful debate. So answer my question. Why the hell are you telling me any of this stuff about Aedas and Thea? If he spoke true, and Hell hadn't been their enemy back then? Whatever side Thea had ruled, she'd been against the Asteri, and Peleus had killed her, fighting for the Asteri. Her mind spun. No wonder nobody knew about Thea. The Asteri had likely erased her from history, but a Fey queen had loved a demon prince, and he had loved her enough to...
I am telling you this because you are racing blind toward your doom. I am telling you this because tonight the veil between our worlds is thinnest, and I might finally speak to you.
You spoke to Hunt before?
Orion was bred to be receptive to our kind. Why do you think he is so adept at hunting us? But that is of no matter. This night, I might appear to you as more than a vision.
He reached out a hand, and Bryce flinched as it touched her. Truly touched her, ice so cold it ached.
Hell is nearly ready to finish this war.
She took a step back. I know what you're going to ask, and my answer is no.
Use the horn. The power Athalar gives you can activate it.
His eyes danced with storms.
Open the doors to hell.
Absolutely fucking not, Apollyon chuckled, low and lethal.
What a disappointment.
The plane that had been Parthos began to fade into nothing.
Come find me in hell when you learn the truth.
Ethan pivoted slowly, eyeing the shadows where the Underking had stood, and vanished.
Don't move from this spot,
Hypaxia warned him, voice low.
I can feel his power all around us. He's turned this clearing into a labyrinth of wards.
Ethan sniffed, as if it'd give him some sense of what the hell she was talking about. But nothing appeared to have changed. No creatures jumped out at them. Still, he said, I'll follow your lead. Hypaxia scanned the sky.
He warded above us, too, to keep us grounded.
She crinkled her nose. Right. On foot it is. Ethan swallowed.
I got your back?
She chuckled. Just keep up, please. He gave her a determined smile.
You got it.
Ethan braced himself as Hypaxia took a step forward, hand extended. Her fingers recoiled at whatever ward she encountered, right as a low snarl sounded from the trees beyond. The hair on his neck rose. His wolf senses told him it wasn't an animal snarl, but it sounded hungry. Another one rippled from nearby, then another, all around them.
What is that?
Ethan breathed, even his veineer eyes failing to pierce the darkness. Hypaxia's hands glowed white-hot with magic. She didn't take her gaze off the trees ahead of them.
The hunting hounds of flame and shadow,
she said grimly, before slamming her hand against the ward in front of them. Chapter 63. He was a micromanaging fucking nightmare, Bryce ranted the next day, as she stood with Hunt, Rune, and Declan in the Ox Training Center during her lunch break. Therion lay sprawled on a bench against the wall, napping. Cormac, standing across the space, frowned. Her brother was pale.
You really think Thea and a bunch of Fae sided with Hell during the war?
Bryce suppressed a shiver of cold at the memory.
Who knows what's true?
Across the vast empty room, Hunt rubbed his jaw. She hadn't even mentioned what Apollyon had said, that little tidbit about Hunt being bred. She'd tackle that later. Hunt mused.
What's the benefit in convincing us of a lie? Or the truth, either, I suppose. All that matters is that Hell is definitely on the move.
Declan said, Can we pause for a moment and remark on the fact that both of you have spoken to the Prince of the Pit? Is no one else about to puke at the thought? Rune held up a hand, and Therion lazily lifted one from the bench, but Bryce high-fived Hunt. Special kids club, she said to the angel, who winked at her. She leapt back a step, rallying her power. Again. They'd been in here for 20 minutes already, practicing. Hunt's lightning flared at his fingertips, and Bryce set her feet apart.
Ready?
He asked. Therion roused himself enough to turn over, propping his head on a fist. Bryce scowled at him, but the mare only waggled his brows in encouragement. She faced Hunt again, right as the angel hurled his lightning at her like a spear. It zinged against her chest, a direct hit, and then she was glowing, power singing, soaring,
2 feet in front of the windows.
She'd no sooner thought the command than she appeared across the space, exactly 2 feet from the windows.
Back to a foot before Hunt.
She appeared before him, so suddenly that he staggered back.
Rune.
She moved again, slower this time, but her brother yelped. Declan braced himself, like he thought he'd be next, so Bryce thought,
a foot behind Hunt.
She pinched her mate's butt so fast he didn't have time to whirl before she'd moved again, this time in front of Declan, who cursed when she poked him in the ribs, then teleported once more. Cormac called from where he'd been standing in the far corner, You're slowing!
She was. Damn it, she was. Bryce rallied her power, Hunt's energy. She appeared in front of Therian's bench, but the mayor was waiting. Fast as a striking shark, Therian grabbed her face and planted a smacking kiss on her lips. Hunt's laugh boomed across the space, and Bryce joined him, batting the mare away.
Too slow, legs, Therian drawled, leaning back against the bench and crossing an ankle over a knee.
He draped an arm along the back of the plastic bench.
And too predictable.
Again, Cormac ordered.
Focus.
Bryce tried, but her bones weighed her down. Tried again to no avail.
I'm out. Concentrate and you could hold on longer. You use too much at once, and don't reserve the energy for later.
Bryce put her hands on her hips as she panted.
Your teleporting works differently than mine. How can you know that? Mine comes from a source of magic, too. Energy, just a different form. Each jump takes more out of me. It's a muscle that you need to build up.
She scowled, wiping her brow as she walked back over to Hunt.
It does seem like he's right, Declan said to Bryce. Your teleporting works when your power gets charged up by energy. Considering what I heard about how quickly you ran out of steam with Hypaxia, Hunt's is the best form of it.
Damn right it is,
Hunt growled, earning a smack on the arm from Bryce.
Do you think the power will stay in me if I don't use it? She asked Deck.
I don't think so, Deck said. Your power came from the gate with a shit ton of first light mixed in. So your magic, beyond the light, I mean, needs to be powered up. It relies on first light or any other form of energy it can get. You're literally a gate. You can take in power and offer it. But it seems the similarity ends there. The gates can store power indefinitely, while yours clearly peters out after a while.
He faced Hunt. And your power, Athalar, as pure energy, is able to draw from her like she did from the gate.
Bryce, when you draw from a source, it's the same way the gates zap power from people using them to communicate.
Bryce blinked. So I'm like some magical leech? Declan laughed.
I think only certain kinds of magic, forms of pure energy. Throw in the horn, which relies on a blast of power to activate it.
And you're a liability, Rune said darkly.
Therian grunted his agreement. Declan rubbed his chin.
You told Rune after the attack that Hypaxia aimed for your scar to supercharge your powers, right? I wonder what would happen if you were struck on the horn.
Let's not find out, Bryce said quickly.
Agreed,
Cormac said from across the room. He pointed to the obstacle course he'd laid out in the center of the space.
Back to work. Follow the track.
Bryce pivoted toward the Avalon Prince and said as casually as she could, I'm shocked you're even here, Cormac said icily.
Because you decided to end our engagement without consulting me.
Hunt muttered to her,
Anything to avoid your exercises, huh?
She glared at her mate, especially as Rune chuckled, but said to Cormac,
I had no other choice.
Shadows rippled around Cormac.
You could have let me know while you were plotting.
There was no plotting. Athalar and I decided and then just waited. The Avalon Prince snarled low. Hunt let out a warning growl of his own. Therian said nothing, though she knew the mayor was monitoring every breath and word. But Cormac didn't take his eyes from her.
Do you have any idea what the phone call with my father was like?
I'm assuming it was similar to the Autumn King telling me I'm a little bitch. Cormac shook his head.
Let's be clear. I'm only here today because I'm well aware that if I'm not, then your brother will cease contacting Agent Daybright.
I'm flattered you know me so well, Rune drawled, his arms crossed.
He'd moved into a position on Cormac's other side, without her even noticing, placing himself between the Avalon Prince and Bryce. Oh, please. Cormac glowered at him, but then focused upon Bryce again.
I'm willing to move beyond this, on the condition that you don't surprise me again. We have too many enemies as it is.
One, she said, don't give me conditions, but two, she made a show of examining her bare arms. Nothing up my sleeves. No other secrets to hide, I swear. Except for that itsy-bitsy thing about Emil.
Hunt gave her a dry look as if to say, liar, but she ignored him. Cormac, however, did not. Catching that look, the Avalon prince said,
there's something else.
Nope. But even Rune now lifted his brows at her. Hunt said casually,
don't be paranoid.
You have something planned,
Cormac pressed.
For fuck's sake, tell me.
I don't have anything planned, Bryce said, other than figuring out this teleporting crap. One moment, Cormac was glancing between her and Hunt. The next, he'd vanished, only to reappear at Bryce's back with a knife to her throat. Bryce stiffened.
Come on, Cormac. There's no need for this.
Lightning shone in Hunt's eyes. Rune had drawn his gun. Therion remained sprawled across the bench, but that was a knife now gleaming in his hand. His focus was fixed on the Avalon prince.
Tell me.
Cormac snarled, and cool metal bit into her throat. Trying not to breathe too deeply, Bryce laid a finger on the blade.
I made the drop. I'll survive.
Cormac hissed at her ear.
Tell me what the fuck you have planned, or you'll lose your head. Good luck growing that back.
You draw blood, and you'll lose your head too.
Hunt growled with lethal menace. She could blind Cormac, she supposed, but would his shadows muffle the impact? She doubted he'd truly kill her, but if he tried, Hunt would definitely attack, Rune would too, and she'd have an even bigger mess on her hands. So Bryce said,
fine, it's about Emil.
Hunt started, so did Therion as the mayor said,
Bryce?
Cormac didn't remove the knife.
What about Emil?
I found him, at the Viper Queen's warehouse. She sighed loudly. I learned he was there, that all the reptiles and gross things in the marshes had told her where he was, and she'd gone to retrieve him. She was the one who killed the people who helped him, and intended to control him. But when I went to the warehouse 2 days ago, he was already gone. Cormac whirled her to face him with rough hands.
Gone where?
Somewhere safe. Apparently the Vipe found it in herself to put him into the care of people who will look after him.
Who?
His face was white with rage. Therion's eyes had widened. I don't know. She wouldn't tell me.
Then I'll make her tell me.
Rune laughed.
No one makes the Viper Queen do anything.
Into her mind, her brother said,
Cormac might not know you well enough to tell when you're lying, but I do.
It's not a lie. Emil is safe.
He's just not where you're claiming.
Oh, he was with the Viper Queen, and now he's somewhere else. Cormac shook his head.
Why would the Viper Queen have any interest in that boy?
Because she likes to collect powerful beings to fight in her pits,
Hunt snarled.
Now put the fucking knife away.
To her relief, the prince lowered the knife from her neck with an easy flip of the blade.
But why would she let go of someone so powerful if she likes to use them in fights?
Bryce said, because Emil has no powers.
Are you shitting me?
Rune asked. Nope, kid's totally human. Cormac's eyes narrowed.
Sophie said,
she lied, Bryce said. Cormac's shoulders slumped.
I need to find him. I shouldn't have put off questioning Spetsos.
Emil is safe and cared for, Bryce interrupted. And that's all you need to know.
I owe it to Sophie.
You owe it to Sophie to keep Emil out of this rebellion. Your life is hardly what I'd call a stable environment. Let him stay hidden. Cormac said to Therion,
what are you going to tell your queen?
Therion offered him a razor-sharp smile.
Absolutely nothing.
A threat of violence simmered beneath the words. If Cormac breathed anything to the mayor, to the River Queen, the Avalon Prince would find himself in a watery grave. Cormac sighed, and to her shock, he said,
I apologize for the knife.
To Hunt, he said,
and I apologize for threatening your mate.
Rune asked, don't I get an apology? Cormac bristled, but Rune grinned. Bryce caught Hunt watching her,
his expression proud, like she'd done something worthy. Had it been her smooth weaving of lies and truth?
Apology accepted, Bryce said, forcing herself to sound chipper, steering away from the topic of Emil. Now back to training.
Cormac shrugged, pointing to the spots he'd taped off. X's on the floor, atop chairs, atop piled mats, beneath a table. Bryce groaned, but marked them, catalogued the path she'd take.
Well, that was exciting, Therian announced, groaning as he got to his feet. Right, I'm out.
Hunt arched a brow.
Where to?
I'm still technically employed by the River Queen. Regardless of what happened with Emil, there are other matters to attend to.
Bryce waved at him, but Rune said,
Dinner tonight?
Therian winked.
You got it.
Then he sauntered through the metal doors and was gone.
All right, Athalar,
Bryce muttered when the mayor had shut the doors.
Time to level up.
Hunt laughed, but his lightning flared again.
Let's do this, Your Highness.
There was something in the way he said Your Highness that made her realize that the expression on his face a moment before hadn't been pride in her manipulation. It had been pride in the way she'd diffused things without violence, like he thought she might actually deserve the title she now bore. Bryce tucked the thought aside. By the time the bolt of lightning slammed into her chest, she was already running. Despite the exhaustion weighing on his very bones, despite the urgency that had sent him and Hypaxia racing here, Ethan couldn't help gaping from the doorway as the party girl he'd loved moved through the ox training space like the wind, vanishing and appearing at will. At his side, Hypaxia monitored the remarkable feats, studying Bryce intently. Bryce finished the obstacle course and halted at Hunt's side, bending over her knees to catch her breath. Hypaxia cleared her throat, stepping into the gymnasium. Even the queen looked ruffled after the endless, terrifying night they'd had. They'd passed Therian on his way out. The mayor had been speaking in low tones to someone on the phone, and had raised his brows with concern at the sight of the dirt and sweat on them. But whoever had been on the phone must have been important enough that he couldn't hang up, and Therian had only continued on after Hypaxia had given him a gesture that seemed to assure him that she was fine. The mayor had stopped and peered back over a shoulder at Ethan, as if needing to confirm the queen's claim, but Ethan had nothing to offer him. What the hell could he say? They weren't fine. Not at all. So they'd left Therian in the hall, the mayor staring after them for a long moment.
What's up?
Rune asked Ethan, waving his greeting to Hypaxia. Then the prince did a double take.
What the hell happened to you two? I thought you were summoning Connor.
The others in the training space halted.
We did indeed try to summon Connor Holstrom last night,
Hypaxia said gravely. Bryce paled as she hurried over.
What happened? Is Connor all right? Are you guys all right?
Ethan's throat worked.
Hypaxia
replied for him.
We did not encounter Connor. The Underking answered.
What happened? Bryce asked again, voice rising.
Ethan met her stare. Pure predatory wolf gleamed there.
He detained us for his amusement, sicked Flame and Shadow's nightmare dogs on us, and warded us into an olive grove with them. It took Hypaxia until now to figure out an exit through the wards that wouldn't get us ripped to shreds. We're fine, though.
Rune whirled with alarm to his fiancé, and the Witch Queen nodded solemnly, shadows in her eyes. Ethan scrubbed at his face before he added,
He wants to see you at Erd's temple.
Hunt's lightning sparked at his fingertips.
Fuck no.
Ethan swallowed hard.
You don't have a choice.
He turned, pleading and exhausted, to Bryce.
Connor is safe for right now, but if you don't show within an hour, the Underking will throw him and the rest of the pack of devils through the gate immediately. He'll make second light of them all.
Chapter 64
Therian strolled through the meat market, casually browsing the stalls, or at least he tried to appear casual. While surveying an array of luckstones, he kept an ear open. In the midday bustle, the general assortment of lowlifes had come here for lunch, shopping, or fucking, and at this point they'd likely have downed at least a few drinks, which meant loose tongues.
I hear the bitch is already pregnant,
one satyr grunted to another, as they sat around a barrel converted into a table, smoked kebabs half-eaten in front of them.
Ephraim's been fucking her good.
Therion pushed aside his disgust at the crude words. He hated that word, bitch. How many times had it been thrown at his sister whenever she'd ventured above? She'd always laughed it off, and Therion had laughed it off with her, but now... He shook off the pang of guilt and moved to the next stall, full of various types of mushrooms from the damp forests to the northeast. He checked his phone, the quick message exchange between him and Pax.
What happened? Are you all right?
He'd written nearly an hour ago, after running into her and Holstrom in the hall of the Ox Training Center. She'd been dirty and tired-looking, and he hadn't been able to so much as ask if she was okay, because he'd been on the phone with the River Queen, who had wanted updates on Emil, which was why he had come here, to maintain the fiction that he was hunting for the kid. He figured he'd do some listening to the idle chatter while pretending, though, pick up gossip from the city creeps. His phone buzzed, and Therion scanned the message on the screen before loosing a long breath. Hypaxia had written,
I'm fine, just some flame and shadow posturing.
He didn't like that one bit, but what the hell could he do about any of it?
Lion's head is in season, said the gnome perched on a stool behind the baskets of fungi, drawing Therion from his thoughts. Morals finished their run, but I've got one last basket left.
Only browsing, Therion said, flashing a smile at the rosy-cheeked, red-capped male.
Let me know if you have any questions, the gnome said, and Therion again tuned into the tables behind him.
Fight last night was brutal. There was nothing left of that lion after.
I drank so much I can't remember who the hell I was fucking.
That dragon finished with them. Only embers.
I need more coffee. They should give us the day off after a holiday, you know.
Therion stilled, slowly turned, pinpointing the speaker who'd snagged his attention.
Dragon.
Well, that was interesting. And fortunate. He'd been lounging on that bench while legs trained, needing the company of others as a distraction from the shuddering earthquake of nerves after last night. He'd fucked the leopard shifter in the garden shadows, had enjoyed every second of it, and from her two orgasms, she had too. He might have walked away from the River Queen's daughter last night, but he hadn't told her that. As far as the River Queen and her daughter knew, and judging by the former's tone on the phone earlier when she called to ask about the hunt for Emil, they were still engaged. But if either of them found out... If they found out, wouldn't it be convenient to have a dragon to offer as an apology present? Wouldn't a dragon be perfect in lieu of Emil?
This place isn't nearly as fun when you're sober, Flynn observed from behind him, 30 minutes later, as he approached in civilian clothes, precisely as Therion had requested.
The attire did little to hide the gun tucked down the back of his shorts. Therion hadn't dared say much on the phone when he'd asked the Fey Lord to meet him here, and while Flynn might act like an unworried frat boy, Therion knew he was too smart to risk asking questions on an open phone line. Therion rose from a table in the midst of the food stalls, where he'd been sipping coffee and filing old emails, and began a casual walk through the market. Low enough that no one, not even the Fennec Fox shifter working a row over, would be able to hear, he said,
I found something you might be interested in.
Flynn feigned typing into his phone.
Yeah?
Therion muttered out of the corner of his mouth.
Remember how your new best friend with the fiery temperament went missing?
You found Ari.
Flynn's voice had become dangerously solemn, a voice that few ever heard, Therion knew, unless they were about to die. Therion pointed toward the wooden walkway built above the market, leading toward an ordinary door that he knew opened into a long hallway. Two blank-faced Fey guards armed with semi-automatic rifles stood before it.
I've got a wild guess about where she might be.
Now he had to figure out how to get the dragon beneath.
Therian eyed the bare-bones wooden hallway as he and Flynn strode down the worn planks, aiming for a round door at its far end. It looked like the entry to a vault, solid iron that didn't reflect the dim first lights. They'd been halted at the first door by the Viper Queen's guards. Flynn had snarled at them, but the males had ignored them, their drug-hazed eyes unblinking as they radioed their leader. That Therian knew of this door at all told her guards he was important enough to warrant a call. And here they were, about to go into the Viper Queen's nest. The massive vault door swung open when they were about 10 feet away, revealing ornate red carpets, definitely Traxian, over marble floors, 3 tall windows with heavy black velvet drapes held back with chains of gold, and low-slung couches designed for lounging. The Viper Queen was sitting on one of them in a white jumpsuit, feet bare, toenails painted a purple so dark it was almost black, the same color as her lipstick. Her gold-tipped nails, however, glinted in the soft lights as she lifted a cigarette to her mouth and puffed away. But beside her, sprawled on the couch, he'd been right. The Viper Queen did like to collect valuable fighters.
Ari, Flynn said tightly, halting just beyond the door.
Mirthroot hung heavy in the air, along with a secondary cloying scent that Therian could only assume was another drug. The dragon, clad in black leggings and a tight black tank top, didn't take her eyes off the massive TV mounted above the dark fireplace across the room. But she replied, Tristan.
Good to see you,
Flynn said, voice taking on that dangerously low quality that so few lived to tell about.
Glad you're in one piece.
The Viper Queen chuckled, and Therian braced himself.
The lion she fought last night can't say the same. Even confined to her humanoid form, she is formidable.
Therian grinned sharply at the ruler of the meat market.
Did you capture her?
He needed to know how she'd done it, if only so he could do it himself. The Viper Queen's snake eyes flared to a nearly neon green.
I'm not in the business of snatching slaves, unlike some people I know.
She smirked at Ariadne. The dragon continued to stare at the TV with fixed intent.
She sought me out and asked for asylum, since she realized there was nowhere on Midgard she might flee from her captor. We reached a bargain that suited us both.
So the dragon had come of her own free will. Maybe he could